CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Joseph Sternberg. He's a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. He writes political economics, observing Europe, the UK, the world when it comes to the constant questions about financial recovery from the pandemic these days and the banking crisis here, bank volatility in Europe, banks in general. We have a new report from the Journal within hours. Bank volatility to cut U.S. economic growth, according to the IMF. Tighter lending expected to shave 0.44 percentage points off U.S. GDP in 2023. The explanation, U.S. banks' lending capacity will decline by 1% this year due to the fall in the value of many bank stocks as investors reassess the health of mid-sized banks, according to the IMF. That reduction in lending is expected to shave 0.44 percentage points off U.S. gross domestic product, the multilateral financial organization said. Joe, this is a IMF statement of what you've already guided us to understand. The banks are in a transition between people doubting them and the non-bank world that is also doubted and that causes troubles. And we're going to suffer this by losing growth or some of the growth that we could have expected this year. Therefore, I ask the big question, is the banking crisis solved with this sacrifice of growth, with the money being moved around? Or are we waiting for the metaphor is shoe to fall?
Well, I think the way that you have to think about this is that we need banks to be able to lend in order for the economy to grow. And you also need all of these non-bank intermediaries to be able to lend or invest in order for the economy to grow, because that's how entrepreneurs and businesses get the capital that they need for productive investment and job creation and wage growth. So I think that what the IMF and others increasingly are warning about is that as a consequence of the fact that central banks around the world are raising interest rates very rapidly, and this is triggering people to reevaluate the value of a lot of the assets that were already on their balance sheets. I mean, at Silicon Valley Bank, that took the form of problems in their portfolio of treasuries. Other pension funds or insurers or banks might be worried about the value of commercial real estate loans that they have on their portfolio, on their balance sheets. And the problem is that until they work out what their assets are worth, it becomes very difficult for them to continue lending at the pace that they had. So we also see a lot of signs that in this environment, loan officers at banks are starting to scrutinize loan applications more carefully than they did before. You might soon start finding that it's difficult for you to get a loan as a small business where, a year ago it might have been a lot easier with exactly the same application, just because the banks are tamping down a bit. And there will also be a regulatory angle here because, certainly policymakers in Washington have threatened much stricter regulation of banks in the wake of the Silicon Valley Bank fiasco. That regulation has costs that will make it difficult for the banks to engage in lending to the same degree that they had done before. And so this is all a problem because until banks have a handle on the value of the assets on their balance sheet, and until they know what the regulatory environment is going to be, it's very difficult for them to lend at levels that would sustain the economic growth that we've had.
The Dodd-Frank Act, we come to this because at least one member of the Trump administration, now Kevin Hassett, the very well-known economics commentator, identifies the Dodd-Frank as a problem for small banks, community banking centers. He reports most recently, the Dodd-Frank Act added massive new regulatory burdens to banks. The problem was that these high regulatory costs were destroying the community banking sector. By 2014, one study showed that the number of community banks serving America had dropped by 14%. The nation was losing about one bank a day. Policymakers on both sides of the aisle were concerned about this because small community banks account for 75% of agricultural loans and half of small business loans. So that was underway before the banking crisis, I take from Kevin Hassett's report. And there's every reason to believe that that decline has accelerated. I know that community banks and regional banks have all seen their stock prices drop, which I presume is a surrogate for people withdrawing funds. Is that correct, Joe?
Well, I mean, the two are not directly related, but I mean, it is certainly the case that there is, you know, both you have the deposit flight from some, although not all, small banks, and that will have an impact on their ability to lend. And then also the share price can have an impact on the ability to lend because that feeds into their capital adequacy, which is a regulatory requirement that they face before they're able to lend out, you know, more money. But I think that the broader point with Dodd-Frank is it goes back to the discussion you and I were having a few minutes ago, John, which is this notion that what we did after 2008 was try to slash interest rates, do all of the quantitative easing so that you could provide huge monetary stimulus to the economy, and then try to manage the risks from that by really tamping down on the banks and making it relatively harder for them to lend than it had been before. And congratulations, because what has happened as a result of this is that it has become materially harder for a lot of banks to do business than it used to be. But that just has shifted the risks to other parts of the economy. And now we're still facing the possibility of a credit crunch as these broader economic changes mean that there might be a period where it will be difficult for banks of any size to lend in the way that they had been.
The Mr. Hassett article goes on to say a Federal Reserve study specifically attributed the problems to the fact that Dodd-Frank made many small banks unprofitable. Silicon Valley Bank was not regarded as a small bank. I think it was the 16th largest in the country. Did its problems stem from Dodd-Frank or an absence of Dodd-Frank or an absence of regulators? I've heard it said that everybody saw the risk, but nobody moved about it, moved on it. Is this just a human error then, Joe, and not in the system?
Well, again, I think that the specific problem that they ran into at Silicon Valley Bank is so interesting in this connection. What happened is that they had built up a huge portfolio of U.S. Treasury bonds, but then those lost value as the interest rates rose. And so it was that dynamic that ultimately proved to be their undoing. And the problem is, under the post-2008 regulatory regime, Dodd-Frank in the U.S., the Basel capital rules applied in other countries, the assumption was always that treasury bonds or other government or sovereign debt would always be safe. So you have this regulatory apparatus that on one level assumed that banks like Silicon Valley Bank are safer than they might actually be, because they are invested heavily in treasuries, even though those treasuries are capable of losing value as rates rise. So we weren't really fixing for the right risks. I think the risks that Dodd-Frank and other regulations have tended to focus on since 2008 were default risk, the risk that banks would run into trouble because they would make a lot of loans that would then end up, the borrower wouldn't be able to repay, and that would create a crisis, which is sort of what happened with subprime mortgages in the U.S. in 2007 and 2008. But now we face a very different set of risks, which the regulatory regime just has been completely blind to.
The banking crisis unsolved. I checked that off because we're going to move to monetary policy. The Federal Reserve next meets May 2nd and 3rd. The ECB, I don't have its calendar, but the ECB has indicated it will continue to tighten to answer the high inflation experienced across the European Union. The Federal Reserve, I believe, remarks by Mr. Powell and his governors, will continue to watch the data. But the intention is to raise rates in order to solve inflation. There is also another voice saying, no, Powell will hesitate or pause. Joe, your measure of the Federal Reserve, why do they continue to doubt Powell? You've given me a consistent understanding that every time he says, I'm going to raise rates, voices stand up immediately and say, no, he isn't. He'll back down. He's a political animal.
Well, I think partly it's just will to believe, because as we've commented many times over the past year, these rate increases are very painful for financial markets. And so they would love to believe that the pain is going to end soon. So I do think that there is a certain amount of wish casting that can go into some of these discussions. But I do think that there is this more serious point that you were hinting at, which is that up until now, it was possible for the Fed to continue raising interest rates and you would have an effect on the stock market, but otherwise the financial system seemed to be holding up pretty well. And this did not seem to be triggering a big increase in unemployment, which actually surprised the Fed. But I think that we're now hitting a situation where things are starting to break, where the financial system does seem to be a bit more vulnerable to, you know, increasing rates the deeper into the cycle that we get. And there is a real question about how long Powell's resolve will last under those circumstances. Now I think more than at any point in the past year, we find ourselves with this real uncertainty about how the Powell Fed is going to balance these competing risks, because the inflation remains. But now you have these financial risks that are starting to build up.
The theory says that it's a year, 9 months to a year, before the Federal Reserve's decision is evident in the markets. We've been about a year. They started the jumbo hikes in spring, late winter, spring of 2022. So the slowing jobs market we expect to see, the hesitation in retail sales we expect to see, housing market is already very soft. What else are you watching for, Joe? Would that satisfy soft jobs, soft retail?
It's impossible to know what to look for right now because there are so many moving parts. And I'm much more concerned in what's going to happen in the financial system, because I think that will feed through to issues like consumer confidence and the like, rather than the other way around. And so I think that the sorts of questions that we need to be asking are small businesses especially able to get the loans that they need in order to sustain or invest in their businesses? Increasingly, I think there might be reason to wonder whether they can.
The answer to that is, Joe, the reporting is the small business is struggling to get loans from banks.
Yep. And then I think also real estate lending is going to be a big issue. I mean, right now there's a lot of attention to commercial real estate, which does seem to be due for a big reckoning with the very high prices that people were paying to do deals over the past few years. But also don't discount the possibility of issues for residential real estate, because that also has experienced a huge boom. So basically, what I do when I try to think about these issues is look at any part of the financial market that had a big boom over the past few years, and then that's going to be the area where you start worrying that there might be a correction of some sort.
Joseph Sternberg, he's in London, helping me understand the banking crisis unsolved, The inflation story unsolved, We're going to move to life in London next, although we're going to stop in France. Joseph Sternberg of the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.